The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is April.
Hi, I'm April. I'm an alcoholic. So I say this before I speak at any meeting, not just the Atlantic group. I have terrible stage fright, and I get very nervous and sometimes lose my train of thought. So if that happens, bear with me. So my sobriety date is July 21st, 2016. I have a sponsor. This is my home group, and I'm going through the steps, and I'm on step 10. Speak into the microphone. Got it. So I'm an alcoholic. Let's see. The first time that I got drunk, I was 14 years old, and I went with my sister to a party at her friend's house, and her mom had, like, supplied all the liquor for everybody. And I wasn't really the kind of person who, like, went out and did, like, things with friends. I didn't really have any friends at the time. I was kind of a bit of a loner. And so when I went to this party with my sister, I just did whatever she did. And when we got there, we started doing shots of tequila, and then we, like, had pina coladas. And that night ended with me sitting on the porch, on the back porch, ripping my pants into shorts. and I don't know why. And then I, like, proceeded to run into the bathroom and, like, puke my brains out. So that was the first time I got drunk, and after that I didn't drink again until I was 21, because I was very religious. I started going to, like, Bible camp and went to, like, youth group. And so I was, like, a very goody-goody girl when I was in high school. So when I started drinking, I was 21. And I think what, like, got me drinking the way that I drank was the show Grey's Anatomy. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in the show, there's this character, her name's Meredith Grey, and she's, like, known as being this, like, tortured soul who's, like, you know, who solves her problems by, like, holding a bottle of Jose Cuervo and drinking it down while she dances it out, I saw that show when I was in college, and so, like, that summer, like, when I was on break or whatever, I decided that that was how I was going to deal with my issues, was I was going to be Meredith Grey, and I thought it was going to be, like, a great thing, you know, that's, you know, how I was going to get through life, like, I'd, like, set my mind on it, which is, like, crazy to think that, like, I was forever going to live my life this way, come to think of it, that being said, I kind of, you know, drank that way, you know, because I was sad. I was a very sad drinker. I drank because I was sad. Let's see. I told you, I get very nervous. I'm from California. I lived there until I was 22. When I moved to New York, I had just broken up with my girlfriend, and it was very emotional and, like, whatever, and I didn't really have anything going for me in California, and so I decided to move to New York, which I have come to know that that's called a geographic, but at the time I just thought, like, it was me moving because I was bored, which is what I would tell everybody when they asked me why I moved to New York. Oh, because California's boring. That's not why, you know, I moved because I wanted to get away from the life that I was living and the girlfriend that I had. And, you know, I was, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent there. And so when I moved to California, or I mean to New York, I moved here, I became friends with this woman who owns a bar. And I spent a lot of time at that bar, couple nights a week. I would be there, and I'd drink for free, and kind of, like, developed this persona of being, like, a socialite party girl in Brooklyn. And, like, I had decided that I was gonna, like, make a living off of that. I was going to start a blog. And I think I actually did. I think I like started the blog, but nothing became of it. And I don't remember what the name of it was, but I was like going to like record all of my outings and like I was just going to be this fun party girl. But that wasn't actually who I was. I was the kind of girl who would like get very, very drunk and then have panic attacks and end up in the ER. Or like the girl who would like get very emotional and call her friends, thank you, you know, manipulative and like end friendships because I was just very dramatic and, you know, self-centered. So I guess, you know, I drank like that for a few years. Yeah, I'm shaking. I hate crowds. Okay. So yeah, I drank. I was very sad. I was a very sad drunk. And what brought me into the rooms was that, you know, for the last year of my drinking, I was very suicidal. I would drink because I was suicidal and then I'd feel a little better for a little while. And then I would wake up the next morning wanting to die. And I kept trying to find ways to manage that and nothing worked. And so I woke up, after the 4th of July this last year. And I just had this feeling of like, I can't do this anymore. Like I can't live with myself. There wasn't any other option for me, you know, and so I had, you know, tried going to AA before, and I remember a friend of mine telling me about a group that really helped her, and so I, like, looked that up, and I came here on a Tuesday night, July 5th, this last year, and went down to the bathroom and looked over at the woman who was standing next to me, and I just told her, hi, I've never been here before, and I've talked to her since then, and she's like, you look terrified. So, you know, I was very scared, but she brought me up here, and she sat me down in the pews, and she introduced me to my first sponsor. And, you know, my first sponsor, she, like, sat down, she asked me if I needed a sponsor, and I said yes, she told me, great, why don't you, you know, do this assignment, define the word self and define the word honesty, and then call me with it tomorrow. And I did that, and I don't know, I was very, like, desperate when I came in here, so, like, you know, calling people wasn't something that I would do. I am terrified of calling people, like, to this day. It's suggested that we make phone calls, and, like, it's very difficult for me to do, you know, but I do it because I want to stay sober. So 9 months in, I'm working the steps. I'm on step 10. Hey baby. and I don't know. I'm really grateful for this group. I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, like I don't wake up every morning wanting to die. I've had a lot of things happen, you know, since getting sober that have been like, you know, that before I would have like used it as an excuse to drink. But I don't know, because of this program and because of the people that I know and the support that I have, I haven't found like a good reason to drink yet. And I don't think I will, as long as I'm working the steps and as long as I'm, working this program. And just really quick, something that like has happened for me recently is that I've like started developing a stronger relationship with a higher power. And I have found that that's been, you know, what it's all about. And something that I really need. I made amends to somebody recently and they told me that I had sucked the life out of them, that it felt like I was sucking the life out of them. So that's like who I was, you know, when I was drinking, and that's how I am without, you know, treating my alcoholism. And, you know, hearing that didn't make me feel sorry for myself or anything. It just made me realize that like I need this program and I need a higher power more than anything. So that I'm not that person. So I'm not somebody who's taking away from people, so that I'm somebody who can give to people. Which is, I don't know, all I've really ever wanted to do is just be somebody who's helpful. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be here. And if you're new and if you're terrified, like I was at my first meeting, I'm glad that you're here and I hope that you hear something tonight that helps you. And that's it. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Jonathan.
Hi, I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I've been waiting, you know, for you guys to ask me to speak. I didn't know if you guys knew who I was. But thank you guys, really, for the Atlantic Group and for everyone who attends and does service here. Sobriety Day is 6/30/13. I have a sponsor. I am on step 3 now, and I think that's it. I definitely belong here. I remember, you know, like some things, like, you know, and if you're new here, I mean, like, God definitely, or higher power, whatever you want to call it, didn't bring you here by mistake. So welcome. You know, you're the lifeline that keeps me and pretty much everyone here sober. You know, I remember, like, not being able to relate with anyone on any level, like, even on a familial level. When I was 9, I remember looking in my family's, like, closet, looking for adoption paperwork because I didn't have a belly button. Like, my mom didn't save my umbilical cord. I didn't have a middle name. I was a chubby kid. I was good at school. You know, all of these things that I could see, and I honestly thought I wasn't related to them. You know, so I was, like, adamantly searching. And that's, like, me in all areas of my life without a program. I am adamantly searching for a reason. I am not like anyone in this room. So, you know, if you feel that way, if you feel like you're completely different, if you feel like you're better than or less than, welcome. You're just like me. The first time I drank, I think I was actually like 5 or something. There's a cute little photo of me on Facebook. Like, we're in the Keys and I'm on a boat, like steering the boat with the beer in my hand. It's adorable. But the first time I got like blackout drunk, was the first time I actually got drunk when I was 13. And you know, the way things work for me is I was in North Carolina visiting my family and my cousins were like back from their deployment. So I was, you know, like I said, I'm the chubby kid who doesn't fit in anywhere, and, like, they invited me to drink, so I had, like, the sense of arrival, you know, like, they're like, oh, you know, come to drink with us, and I was like, yeah, for sure. So naturally, I wake up at 4 a.m., like, with my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother surrounding me as I'm vomiting profusely, and, you know, that's, like, the first time I drank, you know, the feelings that it relieved in me, my restlessness, my irritability, my discontention, the fact that I couldn't stand my mother, my brother, anyone around me, or myself, you know, that's what it did for me, and I drank until I blacked out. And, you know, I didn't drink again until I was, like, 16, and, you know, I lost myself in school and, like, academics. I went to a great high school, and, you know, when I was a sophomore in that high school, I saw that my friends could, like, maintain a level of academic integrity and still drink. And that was, you know, that was, like, appealing to me. I was like, oh, that's cool. You can do that. So naturally, like, this is the way I do things. Like, I judge you if you don't invite me to do it. So when someone invites me to do it, I jump. I jump to do it. And, you know, when I was 16, I started, like, my friend invited me, you know, to partake in some extracurriculars, and I did it, and, you know, from that moment, like, literally there was not a day, unless if I was in the psych ward, unless if I was in the hospital, unless if I was in jail, there was not a day that I did not drink. And that's what my alcoholism is characterized by. You know, the feeling, the need to get out of myself because I need to escape through any means necessary. So, you know, when I'm 20, by the time I'm 20, what my alcoholism looks like to me is like being in the back of a cop car 5 times, like being booked, arrested 5 times, being in a psych ward, knowing everyone at the psych ward on a first name basis who works there. You know, and being like, I remember there was 1 month, where there was like 4 times I'd been hospitalized for physical reasons directly related to alcohol. So that's what it looks like, you know, and I cannot see that every time something like that has happened, every time I'd been arrested, every time I got kicked out of my parents' house, every time that I was in the psych ward or being hospitalized, I had been drunk seconds prior. I am drunk when I'm in that situation. I can't see that. I cannot. But, you know, for the grace of God, I ended up, having a friend who, you know, we went to middle school and high school together and we messed up college together. And, you know, she was actually living in my closet towards the end. She got sober. You know, she got out, she went to a long-term treatment center and, she got out, she had 4 months of sobriety and, And she hung out with me like within a week of her getting out. And, you know, this was like a girl who was like, you know, my drinking friend that like is worse than me. And, I saw her sober for the entire time we were hanging out, asking me questions about myself without trying to put anything in about herself, and being an amazing example of what Alcoholics Anonymous is. And, you know, she invited me to my first set of meetings. I was not sober at any of them, but she did not tell me I could not come back. You know, and like she stayed with me until I decided to make the decision to actually try Alcoholics Anonymous with all that I could. And you know, June 30th, 2013, I stopped completely. And you know, what happened is, you know, I ended up getting a sponsor. I was in South Florida for my first like 2.5 years of sobriety. And you know, she was there when I got my first sponsor. She invited me to a meeting like 40 minutes away. And I was teetering because I was on like my last month of probation. And you know, I was on the beach meditating one night, and I asked God that he show me what my next step should be. And that next day she called me asking me to go to a meeting in West Boca Raton, which is like nowhere. It's like going to the Bronx for a meeting. And I went. And I met my sponsor. He was picking up 11 years of sobriety, and that was March 11th, 2014. And we immediately started on the steps because I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual solution can solve, and that spiritual solution is found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only way I can go through it without, like, you know, burning the book, drilling nails through my eyes, is with a sponsor. So don't worry, you don't do this alone. And you never have to. You know, the most important thing that I do want to relay to the newcomer, to the person who might be teetering, who might not remember, you know, what this is about, what we suffer from, is my first step. You know, and when I learned about my first step, you know, my sponsor never told me what I was. He never, you know, said I was an alcoholic. He just gave me what he had been armed with by himself, from his sponsor before him. And, you know, what I suffer from is a threefold illness of mind, body, and soul. I have a physical allergy, and an allergy is defined as an abnormal reaction to any external substance. Therein, like, you know, alcohol is a natural, it actually destroys your tissues. I don't know if you guys know that. And, you know, your body's, like, to maintain homeostasis, it kind of wants you to expel any excess of that. So when I have... we'll go with my friend who's normal. When they have one and they get that lightheaded feeling, their body tells them to stop and they listen and they stop. I have an abnormal reaction to this external substance and I get this get up and go feeling like I'm in control and I need more and I don't stop until, you know, my parents run out of money, until I end up in jail, until something like that happens. And, you know, that's great. You know, I can stop when I'm in jail, but I can't stay stopped. Because for me, I have a mental obsession. And an obsession is a thought that supersedes all else to the contrary. You know, the fact that I couldn't see I had been arrested 5 times or that I had been in the psych ward and I knew everyone by a first name basis, I couldn't see that because my obsessive thinking tells me that I need to relieve this restlessness and irritability no matter what. And I have a spiritual sickness, a disease. You know, I have no connection with myself, with those around me, and with a higher power. I don't know how to manage my own feelings and emotions. I don't feel comfortable anywhere in life. You know, I don't view anyone around me as being their own individual. I kind of view, like, my mother as being just my mother, not a daughter to her mother, not a mother to my brother, like, just like what I'm going to get out of her. And I have no connection with a higher power to steer me in my life. But, you know, the good news is if you feel like you have those things, like Alcoholics Anonymous is here to help you. You know, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous has been able to give me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I have a host of friends today that, you know, sometimes I feel I don't deserve, even though I know I do deserve them. Because of all the work I'm doing, it's beyond my wildest dreams that these people would be here for me to the extent that they are. You know, the fact is, like, I seldom think of a drink to the extent I used to. And, Yeah, just get sober. Thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Dana.
Hi, I'm Dana. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really, have to have all my stuff. I'm really grateful that Randy asked me to speak. And so my sobriety date is August 27th, 2002. So God willing, this August I'll have 15 years. And I just can't believe it. I mean, on one hand, it's flown by, and the other, I feel like I've been sober forever. So I'm going to tell you, in a general way, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Okay. Speak into the microphone. All right. So let's see. You know, I grew up in a home where everything looked beautiful on the outside. Thank you. And it seemed that way, too. I didn't realize all the things that were missing, you know, until I got to AA, really, to be truthful. I remember hearing somebody say, I never got the instruction booklet on, like, how to live. I clearly think one of my parents, that was their responsibility, but, you know, they're just being who they are, right? I really believe they did their best. So my mother will tell me that I was, I don't know if she would say irritable, but I was definitely restless as a child. I mean, she remembers this from, you know, from the very young age. It was something that was noticeable to them. And, you know, I think I had a terrible amount of anxiety. I felt... I never really felt comfortable. I can remember back to like fifth and sixth grade feeling very nervous, very worried, and I decided one day, I don't know what my motivator was, but I must have been 13, and I decided after school one day I would play a Frank Sinatra album. I'm not that old, so we know that this is like, you know, I'm trying to be an adult. And I got a glass from behind the bar, and I filled it with ice, and I poured Jack Daniels into it. And this is after school on, like, you know, a Thursday, and I'm by myself. This is like the fantasy world I lived in. And I remember drinking it and clinking it in the ice, and I was like, this is so glamorous. 13-year-old at home after school. And I remember, like, the moment it hit me, like, the moment that feeling, that magic of what alcohol does to me, I was like, oh, I could just breathe a sigh of relief. I mean, I was by myself. I was very aware. And I remember going to the bar immediately in my house to get more because I didn't, I wanted this feeling to stay, right? And I had no idea that, you know, I was overshooting the mark, right? No idea. Because what did I know? So, you know, I proceeded to get drunk, do things on my front yard, like twirling around, and I don't even know where I passed out. I just remember waking up being really sick, you know, and my mother holding back my hair or whatever. So... We used to drink at this church school, you know, I grew up in Westchester, you know, in the woods behind there, right? We'd go after school and we would drink. And I remember one day the guys were saying to me, you know, do you want some of blank, an extracurricular activity? And I was like, no, I don't do that. I mean, I'd watch those commercials where they'd, like, crack the egg in the frying pan. You know, like, this is your brain on drugs? No. Thank you. Do you know the next day they asked me, and I said, sure. And he was like, wait a minute. You just said yesterday you don't do this. I was like, I changed my mind. You know, that commercial came back, by the way. Okay? And now it says... your kids are going to ask, and so it's like to educate your kids about it. But it worked for me for a short period of time, like a day. And I got to tell you, I mean, my drinking career was, you know, when I was younger, we had paper licenses everybody had. I didn't have a license because I was like, you know, 15. But they were like this green piece of paper. They weren't laminated, no picture, nothing. And so we would all we would steal our parents' license. We would just, with a pencil eraser, just move the date and then put it in the typewriter and just click the other date. This was our ID. And not to give away my age, but the drinking age was 18, okay? We would go to all the bars in Westchester. We would take a taxi to the bar because we weren't old enough to drive. And then a taxi home, you know, because we weren't old enough to drive. And I, you know, I blacked out often. And I didn't know that was a blackout. Like, I was completely, you know, I didn't understand that that's what happened. Like, there was no discussion of it. But I definitely drank more than my friends, because I would remember that sometimes in the morning or on Monday morning or back at school, people would be mad at me. And, you know, I didn't know why, because it was something I did or said, you know, when I was drinking. And I remember very clearly trying to find other friends also. And I remember going to other bars in other areas in Westchester. There are a bunch of little quaint towns. And then I would sort of outdo my welcome there. There'd be people who I have no idea reason why would not be talking to me. So I would go back, you know, and that was sort of how I did it. I would be at a place until I felt like I sort of, you know, outwore my welcome. And then, so that went on for a while. And then when I was about, I think I was like 20, I met a man who I ended up, you know, falling in love with. He was my higher power. And it worked this way, okay? At this point now, I don't want to get blotto and blackout. Like, I understand sort of that to enjoy this, I have to be conscious, okay? So I remember, because it's very hard if you're an alcoholic, you know, when I put alcohol in my body, I cannot predict how many drinks I'm going to have, even if I'm trying, you know? And I remember a couple times I would get drunk, and I would get the cold shoulder the next day. And that made me so anxious. You know, he's mad at me. I don't know why he's mad at me. You know, I'm afraid to ask, because I'm afraid to hear why, you know, what I said when I was drinking. But I felt like I wasn't going to be able to get away with things with him. And I really wanted to be with him. So I sort of thought, I had this thought or this feeling, you know, that I'm going to be safe from myself, more or less. If I marry him, you know, he's not going to buy this behavior. So, you know, I get married. I get pregnant on my honeymoon. Really, on my honeymoon, not like, you know, it was 9 months and 3 weeks. Because back then you made up that story. And I have this little girl. And it changed me. It changed my drinking. It changed. I was no longer the most important person. I mean, this is what motherhood did to me. This is just my story. And I remember, you know, having a beer after she was born, and, you know, she didn't like it. You know, when I was feeding her, she just didn't like it. And I, you know, that was one of those little signs. But I pushed it down. And then I didn't drink. And I remember always, once I was a mother, always trying to control my drinking. I mean, like, there's like scratches in a tree, you know, splinters under my nails. Sometimes I was successful, sometimes I wasn't. And sometimes I would, you know, have a really bad incident. I don't remember what it was. I blacked out, and I would have to, like, you know, get on the straight and narrow for a while. I'm trying to remember a sequence of events. And essentially that's what it was, you know. it was easier for me to abstain for 2 years than it was to try to control two drinks on Saturday night, you know? And so I had this kind of episodic, like, you know, I used to skim along the bottom. You know, that was sort of how my drinking career went. You know, I never crashed at bottom. And I do think that's because I felt responsible for another human being. I did have another child, another little girl with this man. And I'm just trying to think about I don't think that my drinking had anything to do with the end of my marriage. As a matter of fact, nobody knew I was an alcoholic. I mean, there was one or two people who knew there was sort of a problem, but, you know, nobody was going to really confront me on it. I was very, you know, wired like this, you know? oh, God, I'm trying to think of, like, there were one or two things that happened towards the end, but... Okay, I can't remember what they are, but I will tell you this. I remember sitting in my psychiatrist's office and him pointing out to me that my life was unmanageable when I drank. Now, he knows nothing about the program. I mean, you know, a little here and there, but this is actually what he's telling me. And I'm at that place where I can't keep drinking. I'm burning bridges everywhere I go. All right. And I don't want to burn these bridges. Like, I care. You know, I suffer from an enormous amount of shame when I wake up and I don't know what I did. Like, it's debilitating to me. So I couldn't keep going like that, but I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. I couldn't commit to not drinking. And so he said to me, oh, I know. I said, I can't not drink. I was like, how am I going to toast my daughter at her wedding? He's like, how old is she? I said, 13. She's getting married this June. Like, my kid is getting married. I'm super excited. Alcohol is not even the thought in my mind. So, and that's interesting. So I gave him 6 months, you know, and I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in another town than where I lived. I was in Connecticut at the time because, God forbid, anybody should know me at a meeting. You know, when I hear sponsees and newcomers talk like this, I'm like, oh, yes, I get it. Like, I can't even judge them because I know I did it. And at that meeting, although it called itself an AA meeting, they really didn't talk about alcohol. And there was no solution. And I left there thinking, I do not belong. Like, they talked about some scary outside issues that I just freaked me out. And I thought AA wasn't for me. And look, there's a school of thought that I wasn't ready. But as far as I can see, we don't know because I never had the opportunity to even hear it. You know, that's sort of, you know, that's why when I found the Atlantic Group, I mean, I thought this way from the beginning of where I got sober, but I was sort of fighting the tide in other places. You know, I came here and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, you are my people. And so there was another 4 years where, you know, I really didn't drink. I did some outside issues because, look, I have always, since the time, you know, I was an adult, let's say, I have always wanted to be just comfortably numb. Just comfortably numb. That's just my experience. Alcoholics vary, you know, and also I would tell you during my talk, just look to compare. I mean, just look to identify, don't compare. Because, you know, we're all so different in our stories and the outside things that make the story. And what happened was I was still seeing this doctor at the time. He knew I wasn't drinking. I confessed to doing some other things. And he said to me, I'm going to give you a urine test randomly. And if you're doing anything, I'm not going to treat you. This guy was my higher power because now I'm getting divorced. I have all these issues. And, you know, this was a person who was like, you know, the voice of reason. Freaked me out, you know. And And I knew going back to drinking wasn't really a, you know, wasn't the answer. So he wrote down some meetings. He called, like, this is how I have to go about it, you know? Like, he had to call another therapist in town, and she was an alcoholic, and she had to list meetings that would I would be comfortable in. I mean, you know, just look for any reason. Thank you. I got to get to recovery. So I walk into a woman's meeting in Greenwich, and I have never felt so welcomed anywhere. I mean, I could not believe the demonstration of love and inclusiveness and no judgment. And it was a big book meeting. And I got to tell you something. I have never identified so much as I did when I was reading the big book. And where I got sober, it's not the ritual, right? They don't read the big book and do the steps. I know that sounds amazing, but it's my experience there. I don't know if things have changed. I've been in New York for 4 years. Ooh. But I just want to read something that really changed it for me. Was it says in our preface, gosh, it's hard to see with the microphone. It says at the end, it says, if you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me, or more important, yes, I felt like that, or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. So they weren't doing the work out of the book, but they were giving out the book. And I remember I read all the stories before I even, you know, did the steps that way. And, you know, I just, man, I loved my home group there. It would be the equivalent of what AG is like. I mean, they used to say, some people who were so against our group because it was very strict and, you know, they used to say, you know, they expected you to have a service commitment and, you know, show up and, you know, be on time and people would come if they couldn't get sober at some of the other meetings, and they were like, well, I heard if I really want to get sober, I have to come to the Greenwich 12 and 12, because this is a place where, you know, and so it's so similar when I hear stories about people showing up here at Atlanta Group that have been sober in other parts of New York. So it's, you know, I fit right in here. And, you know, I remember it was a beginner's meeting, which is also, I think, crucial to how groups, you know, survive and grow. And I was a big part of that group. I loved it. I loved AA. I rode the ups and downs, but I really, like, I was doing the deal, like, you know, greeting and making coffee. And it was, there weren't as many commitments, so it was really an honor and a privilege to have a commitment, you know? And I really loved it there. And then, I don't know, like, I got busy, you know? And this is how I can justify it, you know, that thinking. I started to do this sport, this activity that required a lot of time. I had to, like, run or ride my bike or swim pretty much 5-6 days a week. And it would be, like, a month I wasn't at a meeting, or, like, then 2 months. And I remember thinking, wow. What happened? Because I never had a resentment. I never made, like, I'm not going back. Life just took me elsewhere until I think it happened when I had 6 years, right? And then at 8 years, 2 years later, I wanted to drink or kill myself. It never dawned on me, never, that it was untreatable alcoholism. Never dawned on me. I went to every doctor for this, for my thyroid, you know, depression, everything else. I never even thought, like, oh, it's the spiritual, you know, this is the problem. And, you know, I put my hand up in a meeting, and I had to say, you know, I want to drink. I have 8 years sober, and I was really, you know, that was really hard for me. But I got to tell you what. I know that I will die if I drink, and I don't think it'll be from cirrhosis. It will be from suicide, drunk driving, because I'm that kind of drunk. Like, I cry, I want to commit suicide, you know, so, I have no doubt. Like, I'm not being dramatic when I say that. And so I was less ashamed to put my hand up and say I needed help. And so then, you know, I got some help. I had some outside issues, some mental health issues that, you know, I would be so ashamed to say this in the past, but I'm not going to be today. I don't feel that way today. And I used to say things like, I don't think much of myself, but I'm the only thing I think about. Right? I mean, it's not that way today. Because in all the outside help I've gotten and everything that I've explored and done, and I've dug really deep, and really self-awareness is sort of like the booby prize because it doesn't, it doesn't fix anything, right? The solution still lies in this room. The solution is still in this book and the relationship with my higher power. And I think that is phenomenal. You know, and even some of the literature I read, this is amazing. You know, it's somebody with a tormented mind, and the author writes, and this is back in 1940, sometimes men can find relief in a drink. I almost dropped the book, you know. And I'll tell you my first conscious contact with my higher power. I was doing the, I just done my fifth step, and the sponsor I had in Connecticut at the time, you know, we did do some of the work out of the book. It was very convoluted, but she told me to follow the directions precisely. I was to go home. I was to put the book on my shelf and then take it down again. I just did whatever she wanted. Like, I wasn't going to argue, you know, like, that's silly. I'm the compliant type. You know, I'm the compliant type. And then, so it works for me with suggestions such as this. And I got on my knees and I was reading the first five propositions. And it talks about, like, you know, we can walk through, you know, are we building it? I'm not going to quote it verbatim for sure. You know, can we walk through the arch of freedom? You know, have we built all the foundation correctly? And I remember knowing that I had kept something off my four step. And I just remember crying. And this is so beautiful. You guys might not get it, but for me, I felt a feeling like this, where God just kind of like brushed over my head, like just petting me more or less, like, you know, you're okay, my child. You know, and I fessed up to my sponsor the next day. I called her up. I go, I left something off. She goes, what is it? I told her. She goes, okay, good, bye. Like, you know, I guess it's not uncommon. you know, sobriety has been, you know, an amazing journey for me, like just an amazing journey. I had all these things I thought about talking about, and now I can't even remember what they were. Because you know what, I really didn't plan it, and I'm not nervous. I thought, you know what, I remember a sponsor in Greenwich saying to me, I had this commitment where I was going to be speaking from the podium every week for 6 months, and I said, you know, I'm really nervous. And she said, you know what, Dana, that's your ego. If God is speaking through you, you have nothing to be nervous about. And I really thought about that today. Like, I really thought about, I know when I come up here and read the traditions, I'm like freaking out. But when I'm going to come up here and just like have God deliver the message, you know, of what it was like, and what I'm like today. And I do know there was something else, you know, in the back of the book in one of the stories. I believe it's in Acceptance is the Answer. I have the third tradition as well. And he says something in here about we are all children of God. If you believe that God has had your creator, I don't have a religious affiliation. So God for me is just my higher power. Please don't be offended. Use whatever you want. That's, again, no religious affiliation. This is just what I choose to call him. Like, if you believe that he's had a hand in making each and every one of us, then when I criticize myself or you, I am saying that I know better than God. Like, if he made us, like, who am I? Like, that's, you know, sort of helps me a lot. It gives me a lot of comfort to know that And I have a lot of, you know, I would say that I used to be this big ball of fear, right? I heard some guy use this analogy and it was so perfect. I'm like this huge ball of fear and I have little bitty skin, you know, around me. And when I'm afraid, my character defect is I will lash out at you. I mean, this is the thing I struggle with. This is the thing that's actually getting better. Thank you. It's really because, you know, what I don't like in you is what I don't like in myself. You know, and I'm talking about, this is like, you know, we're getting into the specificity of, you know, what 15 years of sobriety looks like, you know. I mean, I'm here for the newcomer. I want you to grab a little piece of something that I said that maybe jarred a feeling in you. You don't have to identify with my exact story. But this is where I am. And so these are the defects, you know, and really what it is my go-to, you know, finding the defects is really God. You know, and God for me, I know this sounds silly, because of the incident in my room, I guess it's like a white light experience, is always in the upper right-hand corner of wherever I am. And he actually kind of looks like, maybe like Santa Claus? Like I actually, you know, and I walk around during the day and I have conversation with him all the time, right? This is just my experience. I mean, sometimes when things go bad, he's still there. I just forgot about him. And when I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, I just turn my back on him because he is always there for me. I have never not been taken care of. You know, I there's been a few instances where things have been really bad. And I would say to my sponsor, I know that God did not bring me all this way to drop me. And she would say, what makes you think there isn't something greater in store for you? Why are you selling God short? She was right. Frightening. I mean, it's real. And you know what? I've had one experience like that after another during my sobriety. And I always say this, like, faith breeds faith. And yet sometimes I will just forget, you know, conveniently forget that that's what works. I keep picking up the wrong book. I do want to read something, and I'm only going to read it because otherwise I'll butcher it. It says, I just, you know, resentments just run me around. But at this point, I write it out, but it's always the exact same thing. Okay, I'm going to read it to you. It's the exact same thing every single solitary time. Every time. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Let me see. Okay. I can watch my serenity level rise and I'm sorry. Hang on a second. You know, it's okay. I must keep my magic magnifying glass mind on my acceptance and off my expectations, for my serenity is directly proportional to the level of my acceptance. When I remember this, I can see I never had it so good, and that's gratitude. And every single time, it is at my expectation. It is my expectation that you will do or say something differently, that you will have read my mind. You know, and it's baffling to me. And you know when they say things like, it's not personal? It really isn't personal. I imagine that there are people who have resentments against me. I'm just being me. Like, I'm not doing anything. And I know people are just being who they are. I mean, I really believe that. I don't think anybody has, you know, sought out to harm me, nor have I to anybody, really truthfully. Why? Why do I have to, you know, if I see my part in something, you know, thank you. I recently lost my job. Devastating for me, right? Devastating. And the truth is, where did I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate seemingly without provocation? Ding, ding, ding. I saw this right away. You know, I saw it right away. And it took 2 years, you know, for it to implode. And there were some unfair things that happened, yes. But you know what? I think in every incident, if it's unfair and I'm suffering, I'm a victim. I signed up. Truly, at this point in my sobriety, I'm not saying there aren't real victims out there. I'm just saying at this point. And you know what? I let it go. And every time I think about, no, this wasn't fair, I'm like, put it out of your head, Dana. It doesn't matter. It's over. It's done. I do not need to relive it over and over again. It serves no one, least of all me or somebody I would help. Oh, that went quickly. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. I hope somebody got something.